From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. Going to have a fun show today and bringing on a guy who's got a lot of experience in entrepreneurship. He's got businesses around the world. And he was just, we were just kind of joking that he says he has a little bit of an accent. So you, the audience, I want you to guess what this accent is from and see if you can guess this. But he's got his own business, a number of businesses. We'll talk about that. But I also want to talk about the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy and all the different things that you do for this region and for up-and-coming entrepreneurs. So with that said, I want to introduce Dr. Christian Renaudin. He is the managing director and CEO and the founder of Market Tech Group. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't you give me a little bit of your background and how you got into entrepreneurship and how you got to SEA, the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy.
Well, I guess getting into entrepreneurship is kind of a virus you get somewhere, you know, and then you can't get rid of it. There's no cure.
Yes.
So I came in the U.S. In 1993 after doing my studies in France.
You gave it away. Okay, some of you might have already known.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Well, anyway, so doing a veterinary degree there, and then I did a biomedical engineering PhD. Mm. And I thought, you know, I don't see myself in research, even though it's kind of fun, but I need the vibe. And I heard California had a lot of entrepreneurship activities, the Silicon Valley, the dream. Mm-hmm. Everybody looks at California as the dreamland for entrepreneurship, to be honest. So I thought, okay, I come here and I got an MBA. And then I said, okay, I'm going to get a cozy job. But actually, what happened is I met into Charlie Soderquist, who was a very well-known entrepreneur back in the 90s in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And he had a business incubator in West Sacramento and was trying to groom a bunch of startups, about 25, I think, at the time. And I was gravitating around, got to meet the guy, phenomenal person, a Renaissance man, you know, true mm-hmm. entrepreneur. And got to help him with a couple of startups, refining their business plan, their marketing plan. And then he said, no, why don't you set up something, have some fun? And I'm like, well, you know, it was not the plan, but I guess that is fun. So I started the consulting company, the Market Tech Group, under the incubation first, and then I spun off.
Okay, so you help as the consulting firm. What do you do? What kind of focus? Is your medical focus, is that right?
Right. So initially we were targeting startups, but that doesn't pay the bill. Needed cash. So mm-hmm. we went into corporate consulting. And yes, we do their go-to-market strategy, pricing strategy, new product introduction planning, mostly based on marketing research kind of activities.
Okay.
And that's around the world.
So you have a business that really helps other businesses to grow, it sounds
yes.
like. I'm not going to dive as deep into that. What led you to the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy? Because that's really these earlier stage companies and a yep. lot of the companies that that you and I are both involved with as well.
Yes.
Run through organizations like yours and yours specifically.
Right. So essentially, ever since I met Charlie, I knew he was involved with this nonprofit. And he had those three golden rules about startup, you know, viability. He said, you know, is there a pain, a problem to solve? Mm. Can you actually create the solution? And can you make money at it? Which is the important part as
That's
well.
It's helpful.
Right. So he had those rules, and I said, hey, come over. I was a listener of those Saturday sessions already back then, you know, talking 25 years, 30 years ago. I think it started 40 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
So, and I got really excited about that. I like the vibe, the energy. Mm-hmm. As you know, an entrepreneur is somebody like yourself who's got the enthusiasm and always thinking positive, looking at solutions rather than problems.
You have to, because, I mean, in entrepreneurship, I think you would probably agree with me that if you don't have some passion and some energy and enthusiasm around what you're trying to do, it really never takes flight.
Exactly.
And sometimes that's one of the most difficult things I think that people face in their life is, what can I get excited about?
Yep.
And building things is something that entrepreneurs just, they sort of crave to do. Like you said, it's kind of like a virus.
It is. And the virus to thrive has to be in a positive energy environment. So that works beautifully. So I got that, you know, and And then there was a gap for 10, 15 years focusing on growing my consulting company. And then I came back slowly to first being a lecturer, quote unquote, sharing what I know humbly, because, you know, nobody claims to be good at anything unless you really produce results. And sharing your knowledge, your passion. And then later on, I was invited to be on the board. But before that, I met a gentleman in one of the founders of the Sacramento Angel, Kerry Adams.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was involved with Sarda as a founder as well. And he wanted me to start a small pilot investment fund in this region in medtech. That was his vision. So he wanted me to join him because of my corporate clients and connections around the world, as you mentioned. Not that we disclose that I'm French. Anyway, so we started this small fund with a local LPs, family office, and some other passionate entrepreneurs, people in healthcare. And we made 8 investments, and we had 1 exit so far, 2 exit actually, not enough to get the return yet. Mm-hmm. And so unfortunately, Kerry passed away 2 years ago, and so I'm continuing to manage this initiative. It's called Almond Tree Capital.
Yeah.
Seed stage investment. I don't know if we're going to do a fund 2 or not. It's still in the works. But managing the existing companies is my primary focus. Yeah. And so that plus the Entrepreneurship Academy, where I said, you know, I think it's synergistic and see how we can find some projects eventually from this academy. And then at this stage today, it's really, really giving back and be involved in the community. That's what it's about.
When you think about what the Sacramento entrepreneurial community, the ecosystem, if you will, what it looks like today, and some of the people that really got things going. Jim Corbett, I know he's been on the show a few times, is the person that started SEA.
He's the founder.
But Kerry, you know, he's missed, but we stand on his shoulders, your shoulders, Jim Corbett's shoulders, and others. And Sacramento's really becoming more than what it was back 20, 30 years ago. How would you describe the change of this last 30 years in Sacramento?
Well, the massive one is basically getting the energy from the Bay Area, because we used to be kind of a government, cozy, agriculture-oriented center of excellence for those. But then we started to have more healthcare companies, that are in the managed care business or the delivery business. It's a huge employer in the town. And the issue we still have, I mean, it has evolved with, there was always entrepreneurship. You know, back the Robodoc companies that I was involved indirectly, which was a UC Davis professor initiative financed by Sutter Health Ventures at the time. IBM was involved, and there was like the first robot ever in the world to do a hip surgery replacement, which was phenomenal. But that company didn't pan out for different reasons. We can do a postmortem analysis about this. But this was very exciting. So there's always been this motivation to start a business, promote a technology, achieve the dream that we see so big nearby in the Silicon Valley, to do the same thing here. Mm-hmm. We needed more of the ingredients that Growth Factory brings, for example.
Oh, thank you.
We need more of the tools and skills and networking. And it's difficult because there's Steve Weiss, a phenomenal entrepreneur from the Bay Area, who used to live in around here, said to me that the Bay Area has a high entropy because in a small plot of land, there's a lot of energy, high concentration. Mm-hmm. People just go to a coffee shop and exchange ideas and write things on napkins. And, you know, you heard the stories that business were financed on a napkin, not a full-blown business plan. We don't have that here. So it's a little bit more scholar, a little bit more education-oriented. And there's a lot of initiative now that we didn't have when the SCA was the one game in town at the time from Jim. Now we have a lot of choice for entrepreneurs, different ways. But we still have the entrepreneur problem, in my opinion. Asking me how it has evolved, we have clusters. So we have Roseville, we have Rancho, we have UC Davis doing their things, we have Sac State doing their things, and we try to connect all the dots. People like Cameron Law is doing a phenomenal job to connect everything. Laura Good does a phenomenal job also.
Yes.
And many other people I can't mention here. But we still have those clusters. How do we bring the entropy? And it has to be around the concentration of talent in a small area. And so that's the challenge. You know, we always say the causeway between Davis and Sacramento is a big barrier, and it is actually for some reason, especially now with the construction. But you know, I think eventually those clusters will connect more and more.
I think so.
And I think that will be a little bit more like Silicon Valley-like, a different model. I don't think we should replicate what they've done there. I think we are on the made in Sacramento way of doing things, mm-hmm. you know?
No, I agree with you. What I've seen with Cameron Law and Laura Good and SEA and GSEC and others is this desire to break down any silos that may have existed at one point, and let's come together. We call it the backyard advantage, right? The most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love, right? Helping one another. And it starts with talking, right, to one another. It starts with listening to one another. And, you know, that's kind of what this show is about, is how do we get the ideas out there so that people don't feel quite so alone, and we can bring that a little bit more of a concentrated effort around entrepreneurship for the region. I feel like it's happening, but I think most of it is happening because there's almost like an attitude shift from when I started the show back in 2015 to today. I definitely sense a more collaborative mindset.
Yes, but also we need to be back face to face. COVID has taught us a lot of different models that we can use that are in my business, in healthcare, in a consulting business. Telehealth is there to stay. You know, a lot of video consultation could be done, et cetera, et cetera. But I can, I think it's essential that we go face to face for entrepreneurship meetings, you know, the one you did not long ago here, or GFX, etc.
Yes.
How could you be excited if it's just looking at a screen with people who are not, you're not touching, you're not seeing?
It's hard to do. One of my mantras is you can't motivate my modem, right? It's like, it's super difficult to inspire people on a Zoom call. It's
correct.
Possible, it's not impossible, but it's so much more real and people are so much more authentic in a face-to-face kind of environment. That's why we do this show face-to-face versus,
exactly,
you know, do it on Zoom. We want some authenticity. And, you know, I want to get to know the guests as well better. So I appreciate you coming on the show today. Let's go into SEA a little bit. So Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy.
Yes.
Give us an overview of what it is and what you, you know, what you try to accomplish or what you actually do accomplish.
I'll start with what we were living here is the face-to-face aspect. This is a program that has some flexibility on remote classes because it is an instructional program with a goal of creating a business plan and some deliverables I'll mention in a minute. But the main thing is we want people to be face-to-face for the simple reason that we create teams. Mm. So you come to this program, and it's starting January 11th, next year, 25, new cohort nice. Coming, our 40 year, you know, wow. next year. And so they see each other, they introduce themselves, this is my passion, this is the problem I want to solve. Some already have a company, possibly. It doesn't have to be a de novo idea or just a potential project, but you somehow already have a company, they want to pivot, they scale it, whatever that is, you know? And so they inspire others, or you inspire your colleagues, and they start to create teams. So can't do that on a Zoom call. That was very, very difficult.
Okay, so on these teams, so it's this is a weekly program
correct.
That you run. It's like on Saturdays, I believe.
Correct, 15 Saturdays.
15 Saturdays in a row?
Yes, so basically wow. from mid-January all the way to the end of April, graduation is on May 15th this year, and the showcase is on May 7th.
Okay, so the team, so if I come to this and I have a company already, let's say two people have their own company, do they, those two people that both already have started a business, they team up? How does that work?
So they could. I mean, they could say, you know, I'm going to use your company as a case for mine.
Okay.
They could do that. You know, that doesn't have to be your project, your company. Of course, there's going to be a little bit of competitive. I mean,
right.
entrepreneurs are competitive.
Okay,
right?
So it's kind of like a student. It's a set of students
right.
creating class projects together versus necessarily building a business.
Right. So all of the above. So let me give you the three source of our fellows. One is obviously right after college or in the middle of college or high school.
Okay. So your student is a fellow. That's what that's
a fellow. Okay, we call them a fellow. We call them fellows. And so they're going to be a good third of them, if not half, are from those sources. UC Davis, Sac State, other colleges, people from out of Sacramento, as long as they want to drive. Mm-hmm. And then the other one are people who are in there, have a job, and they think, they've been thinking about a project, you know, and they were afraid to do it. And we say, you know, it's okay. You can try, you know. At some point, you have to quit your job to really be 100%. And so they're thinking about saying, you know, I've been doing 20 years working for a nice employer or several employers, but I have my own project. Yeah. And so we give them kind of the kicker to say, okay, why don't you join us on Saturdays? You can still keep your job for now, mm-hmm. and see if you want to mingle with other entrepreneurs, promote your idea, or join somebody else's team. Uh-huh. So those are those people. And then you have also those who are more academic, people who have technology knowledge, but they just don't know how to do it as a business. I'm sure you've seen a lot of great technology projects, but they don't have the business acumen yet, right? Yes. So it's like Steve Wozniak, who had the technology, and Steve Jobs had the business acumen, you know? Mm-hmm. The two together is dynamite.
So if you already have a business, let's say you have a business already that's doing $500,000 a year in revenue, and you want to take it to $100 million, is that something that's probably not a good fit for SEA? It's really more of the way early stage, or maybe even the idea stage.
Right. So it's a stretch, but okay. I don't see that as an impossibility. Okay. But, you know, let's say you, you know, we're not just technology jobs at SEA. We're agnostic. You could be a barbershop, you could be a restaurant, you could be any business, right? Some of them will not require an equity financing, which you and I are interested as investors. Mm-hmm. But they may just leverage debt, have an SBA loan, whatever, right? But it's still business, and they still need to have a business plan. So you could have a sole proprietor who says, I want to scale. You know, I want to franchise this thing. And that would be a good program for them.
Okay, gotcha. You know, one of the things that I have been wrestling with is maybe doing a show or really promoting the idea of, if you are a great employee of a company that has an older founder, if you will, I'm thinking specifically in the trades of construction, we have a shortage of people that want to do, you know, turn wrenches and, you know, do real mechanical type stuff. But then these people that we kind of, there's a, you know, the baby boomers are starting to age out of entrepreneurs. They're ready to sell their company or retire, but yet it's kind of hard to sell a construction company, especially if it's really small.
Right.
So what can you do? Well, if you have a great employee that is capable of potentially taking over the business because they understand the product, they understand the technology, if you will,
yep.
but they just don't have a business acumen. They're used to building stuff, but yet, in construction, it's pretty easy to either start your own business or convince your boss to put you in a position to buy his company. Or
right.
Her company.
So this is what we call intrapreneur, inside the company as opposed to outside. And there's nothing wrong with that. And actually, you know, we should mention SMUD. SMUD is a fantastic partner locally for a lot of our entrepreneurial program. They want to promote also intrapreneur. Mm-hmm. You're not going to quit SMUD, but they're going to participate to a new division, new activity or something. That applies to what you're just talking about.
Yes.
I mean, if I were on the way out on my business and I have a young person who really want to take it over, I want to make sure that person is well equipped. Yes. And you have to really understand the ins and outs of the business. Start with a business plan. They may just say, you know what, you've been in this direction for so many years. I want to bring it to a different direction. Mm-hmm. And that's what this program does, because we follow those four pillars or three pillars that Charlie Soderquist I mentioned earlier, which is there a problem to solve? What is the solution? How do you make money on it? And how do you forecast your business? So we take sort of those 15 Saturdays, all parts from ideation to a very polished business plan with pro forma and financials ready to receive investment. That's the product. That's
okay.
The product.
So most of it is companies that are wanting to receive investment of some kind. So is it predominantly people who want to build technology companies?
Anything. It's really interesting. Last year we had a company that was going to be created to create a new entertainment, jazz entertainment in Sacramento. You know, nothing to do with technology, really a maybe a platform for ticketing or whatever. Maybe there's some technology angle there. But another one was a barbershop, literally three cohorts ago, so 3 years ago. And she wanted to replicate this with a specific target segment. So that's what we teach them. You know,
so
how what
to
is
scale
your segment?
A barbershop into something. Maybe it's you mentioned franchising. You
exactly,
may
could
take
be
that.
Franchising. Could be that they're doing themselves. Mm-hmm. There's different models out there. So all our speakers will come every Saturday morning. So it's from 8:30 to 12:30 time segment. First halftime is about a formal presentation from a speaker. The speaker would be somebody who's done it before. Could be a branding expert who had a communication agency, and he or she's going to speak about their experience doing that. Another one is going to be an accounting, someone from an accounting firm who will present how to do pro forma. So we don't have pure academics. We have only professionals who've done it hands-on and share the experience. And then the second half of the morning is workshop. So how does it apply to my little project? You know, or my bigger project, it's little for now, but it's going to hatch big, right? So they go through this, and they, every Saturday there's more iteration on top of the prior. So it's an iterative process where they build a business plan, very, very crude the first few Saturdays, to a final product at the end. And how to pitch it. Because as you know, the energy, the passion to communicate, we talked about the positive energy, you have to show that you believe in your project.
Okay, let's talk about that for a little bit, because we see a lot of startups, and part of the process for startups that we're around, for, in many cases, they're looking to raise money, and then you have to go pitch, you have to go present. And I think no matter what you're doing in life, everything is sales at some level.
That's right.
But people had... they don't really, a lot of times, don't have the confidence to do that. That's an area where so many people need to develop confidence. Not only do they need to develop the right messaging, but the confidence to deliver the message.
That's right. So you're not going to make them opera singer. Right? People who is more introverted will remain introvert, but they will acquire techniques to communicate effectively in 5 minutes, because remember, we don't have a whole hour to convince people. That's what you guys do here is the quick pitch, right? Yes. Or the speed dating and
speed
all.
Speed dating, yes.
I tell them, even outside ACA, I tell my own staff, everybody, you know, you got to deliver that story. By the time you take the elevator on the ground floor to floor 10, you should be able to deliver the main thing that fast, you know, 1 minute, right? If you don't convince me in 1 minute, you lost it, right? So you got to engage me first. Then you're on the right to, you know, get from me 10 more minutes because I'm interested in your project. And then who knows, it could go all the way to an hour, you know? Right. But you have 1 minute to unfold that thing.
Oh, I love that. So the elevator pitch is something that is so essential, but people don't get that. Well, many times.
Yes, because there's no formal education for it. You know, academic, that's where academia is great, but it doesn't tell you how to communicate efficiently. So that's what they learn. And you could be an introvert and communicate efficiently. You're not going to be as lively as you and I are. You may be calmer, but you can be efficient no matter what. And so I think that's what they do. And then that's where the teamwork comes into place. The CEO usually should pitch, right? Usually, if you're not the CEO, you're not pitching. If you're the CEO and you're not pitching, there's an issue of convincing investors. But in our program, it could be that the founder may not be the CEO. Because remember, they work in a team. So you have that person may have the project already, or may already have the company, but that company didn't take off yet. But then somebody joined the team who's a great communicator could become the CEO.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yes. And what I would say to anybody that's out there watching or listening, or one of your students, one of your fellows, is a lot of us, I'm introverted by nature, but you don't know it because this is my job and this is what I've had to develop in order to, you know, use my, I guess, fears to, to, you know, I just bring a little extra energy to overcome some of these fears or some of this introverted personality. And so I would challenge you out there to believe that you can change. Even if you are introverted, you could tweak your approach a little bit, because if you're going to be an effective CEO, I agree with you 100%, you're going to need to communicate.
Correct.
Otherwise, your effectiveness level is not going to be nearly as good. You could still be an entrepreneur as successful, swinging a hammer or a small company, but you're going to be so much more successful.
Absolutely.
If you can communicate.
And so some can do that. I'll always bring back Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs. If there was no Steve Jobs, there would not be Apple, right?
Right.
The guy created a revolution technology-wise. He invented so many things for a PC. But without Steve Jobs, Apple would not exist. So in this case, Steve Wozniak was a great person, was not effective and let Steve become the CEO. But it could be that sometime you can transform yourself. You know, right. It's very transformative to go through ACA with our program, because you are challenged to speak it out. But it could be that, you know, it's not really for me. I'll be on a second plan, a little bit behind, let somebody else do it. And there's nothing wrong with that, but at least you give it a try.
Yeah. You know, nobody builds a truly great company alone. And I love the fact that you're bringing together teams, even if they're not the long-term founding team of the company. Ultimately, the most effective CEOs put people in their lives, whether they be co-founders or leadership teams, that work together to build something. Because the yes. solopreneur is a lonely way to go.
It is hard. And you're absolutely raising a fantastic point. And companies are team, right? And there's a spokesperson, but sometimes there's several spokesperson. You know, some of our teams last year, they were segmenting the time of pitching the deck with different person at different moment. Mm-hmm. So one was talking about the problem and ta-da, we have a solution, right? And then somebody else took over the growth of the company, the plan, the performance, and the financial. That was not the person who introduced the solution. And so you could play a role where everybody contributes, and you could have several speakers for the same pitch.
Yeah, and I can speak to that specifically. I built security camera businesses, video store security camera companies, and I always had business partners. My brother was my business partner. And after we sold some companies, he retired, and then I started something called Haney Biz. And I did it. I had teammates that were inner circle people and started the podcast and so on. Started making investments, but it wasn't until I added Rick Spencer and Monique Brown, my yep. two co-founders, that we were able to launch the Growth Factory. And then it became way more special, because it wasn't my messaging anymore. It was our collective message. It was the yes. collective backyard of all of Sacramento. And so we got it out of my backyard
yep.
and with their help.
Beautiful example. Yeah. I mean, the team is usually better than the sum of the parts.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. So what are the big things in entrepreneurship that you see in terms of mistakes that that these small business folks and startup entrepreneurs make? They make mistakes. What kind of challenges are they run into? What kind of mistakes are they making?
We all make more mistakes than we do. So, I mean, I can speak for my own business.
It's true. So. Ask my wife. She would agree with that about me.
Well, the biggest one is, in my opinion, is to not recognizing when it's time to pivot. Because you may have an initial plan, and it's not because it was written in your business plan, this is where we're going. Mm-hmm. When you start to have feedback from other people, and they tell you, have you thought about that? Have you thought about this? And then you start to realize, oh, maybe I should go a little bit different direction, you know? Mm-hmm. And so those adjustments are essential, and the agility is essential for a startup.
Yeah. I would say every company we've invested into, every company I've ever launched, there's a point in time when you're going to pivot. There's, if the company sticks around long enough, there's many times when you're going to pivot at some level. And so when we invest into entrepreneurs, we typically invest into companies that are going to scale or attempt to scale, but we invest into the entrepreneur. And one of the qualities that I look for in every entrepreneur is humility. Mm. And I feel like that has a lot to do with the ability to recognize when you're going to need to pivot, because some of these people that are overly confident lack that humility. they're also, those are the ones that are probably not going to recognize when it's time to pivot.
That's true. And that's a barrier. You become your own barrier, mm-hmm. right? And so you're absolutely right. And I want to do a little segue on the women entrepreneur versus male entrepreneur.
Oh, actually. Okay.
Is the true fact that women are more capital efficient. They have a little bit more of a team spirit.
You sound sexist.
No. But the point is, though, because they focus on the team, not themselves, that allows them to be more observant and eventually just, you know.
And maybe more empathy,
aspect. Exactly. But that's a little segue on that, because this shows the example. I mean, I've been very inspired with that. But the other thing that's important to recognize also is the notion of risk-taking. Because you have to be able to bet the farm when you're convinced this is the thing. Mm-hmm. And doing small increments, which I've done in my own business, that's why I'm not wildly successful and I'm not a billionaire. It's because I've been myself a little bit hesitant to bet the farm on that new thing. Mm-hmm. And every time you hesitate, that means you have a little bit of an apprehension for the risk. But when you start to rationalize that, and that's the message for everybody who wants to start a business, quit a job and everything, you will never die from it. You will always recover, and actually good things will happen. And anybody take a little bit of a risk, the history has shown, they are much better off than those who didn't take any risk because they were afraid of taking that risk.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the most wildly successful entrepreneurs. They bet big, many cases, on things that most people would bet against. In other words, that they're also kind of the dark horse, if you will. Yeah. They're a little bit of the long shot, the underdog. That's not how that works. But if you know something that most people would disagree with, but you know it to be true, or you have a high conviction level that it is true, and you bet big there, that's when you hit the home run.
Absolutely. I'll give you an analogy. I grew up in the Alps. Now we know for a fact that I'm French.
The French Alps. Okay.
French Alps.
I was thinking the Swiss Alps. Okay.
Right, the French Alps. So I used to ski quite a bit. And when I was doing some extreme ski, actually, so I was going on the corridor under a big gondola where you're not supposed to go. And I was young and I took some risk, but not to the point where I knew my life would be in danger. But when you're at the top of this hill and it's very steep, there's a point you call yourself, you got to commit. There's no return. When you commit, you commit. And that moment when you jump and you go down, and a lot of our listeners maybe do ski like that or other sports, there's no return and then you got to go, right? And in business...
And if you don't, you're more likely to get hurt.
Exactly. Yeah. So you got to commit, right? It's like, I prepared myself. I know that's the right thing. I'm going to do it. And that moment of apprehension is gone. But that's the same thing in business, in my opinion. It's you're about to make a decision and say, okay, I'm going to launch this product. We're going to do this. There's a moment where you say, well, there's a lot of money at stake. And if you have investors, even, you know, worse. It's mm-hmm. not just you money, somebody else money. And you got to go for it.
You do.
And that moment defines the entrepreneur. It defines you as a leader, as an entrepreneur, because you're going for it and the whole team trusts you and go with you.
Yeah, I think those are some of the biggest questions is when to go. I like to call it, what are you going to do with what you got? When these companies are first launching, they don't have as much. But once they have enough conviction, it's time to go. And if you don't get that question right, what are you going to do? I mean, you got to do something. So even if it's the wrong thing, sometimes you got to be able to take inspired action and then understand that you might have to pivot.
That's right. But again, coming back to the academy, we teach them to recognize those moments as well. So it's not just make a decision and be foolish. That's not the message here I'm trying to communicate. Right. I don't think I'm selling foolishness here. But you've been preparing yourself by doing the disciplined approach of understanding the need, the pain point, understanding that you have a solution, looking at your competitive environment, that you only want so this one angle there with the competitive advantage. All of that is still true today. I mean, you can't just put that aside. But the moment where you have to go and make that decision is what I was talking about. The other thing is the resilience. Asking about true features of entrepreneurs is people who've been told no 20 times, and then you said earlier, nobody would go for that, right? And you, yet you're still doing it. Yes. Because you're convinced in your analysis that there is a real big problem. Nobody looked at it that way. I know I can solve it. I know I can make money. And those who say no, maybe it's not the fit. I mean, you should not say, I mean, especially in our French culture, if we, somebody disagrees with you, you tend to think about people as idiots. And so that's not the right approach, right? The right approach to say they have a different perspective, okay? Mm-hmm. And I respect that. I'll move on until I find my match. And some of the startups I invested into, the entrepreneurs have been pitching like 40, 50 times before they got the right fit. Yeah. And there's always going to be an investor, and especially in this ecosystem now nationally, not just locally in Sacramento, I'm talking national. There's always going to be somebody who's going to be looking at you as the right fit because they believe in the idea just like you do. So you're gonna find the right fit. It's not just the taking the money. The local angel here, they don't invest primarily in Sacramento. They were actually, they told me only 10% of the companies that they
invest in. Sac Angels?
Sac Angels, yeah. Sac Angel. Only 10% are local. They invest nationally. So we have a transformation in terms of what used to be a local business proximity investment. I remember when Charlie was around, he was saying, you know, we can't get Silicon Valley money because it's too much of a drive to come here for the board meetings. Well, these days, a lot of board meetings are phone call, right? Or Zoom call, and that's not a barrier anymore. So there's plenty of options for financing, but you got to be resilient until you find the right partner.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, a differentiation for us at the Growth Factory is we are relentlessly local, only investing into companies in our region.
Right.
And the whole idea is let's drive local success, and that success breeds other success.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the backyard concept is there. I'm not contradicting that.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is if you do an LGBTQ new line of clothing and locally you can't find your Series A because you need money to, you know, scale up your operation, and locally nobody believes in that, but there is a fund somewhere in Colorado, just
true.
As that,
true.
You'd be foolish not to take their money.
Oh, I would agree. And I think that's kind of like what the Sac Angels at some level, and for sure the Growth Factory, we write these initial checks, early stage checks, so that they can attract other people's money back into our region.
That's right.
We'll take Bay Area money into the or New York money or French money into Sacramento all day long and help drive our local
economy.
Right.
That's right. No, absolutely. So it depends on the stage. Obviously, you know, there's a classic angel family and friend, angel, mm-hmm. seed, and series A, B, C, D, you know, that's the classic. But it's only for those who are adequate for equity investment. But the vast majority of businesses are debt financing and loans and things that don't involve equity.
True. Okay, so when you're talking about financing a company, I always like to say you should raise money from your customers. But
that's a good one.
In addition to that, though, you're taking outside capital in. So the people that are coming through SEA are predominantly more Main Street type businesses that are going to be getting debt financing or bootstrapping the company versus venture capital, all the seed, series A, B, C, and D, and all that.
Yeah, so I don't have stats for you, but just top of mind, based on my observation of the different cohorts, I would say a good half are more non-VC eligible businesses. Okay. But we do have a half that are technology, med, ag. Every year we have some kind of tech, of course.
Okay.
But they tend, there's a lot in med, actually, surprisingly. I saw a lot of your own companies are medical, mm-hmm. as well. And high tech, of course. And we have ag tech now. And I want to salute John.
John Salop.
Salop, who does a phenomenal job with AgStart. Eco-friendly, et cetera. So all the different technology types. So we do have about half, I would say.
Okay.
And you know, when you look at it, in the history of the SEA, we had phenomenal businesses that have been built, I would say 50 or 60 ballpark out of the 800 alumni that we have since the last 40 years. But I would say a good half have not even started a business.
Okay.
They ended up changing their mindset, become phenomenal product managers or general manager, whatever. It's transformative, in terms of their entrepreneurial journey, but they have not started the company right away. And sometimes it's delayed. There are a few I've talked to, I don't want to mention their name without their authorization, but they were good employees or contributors, colleagues, co-workers in investment banking. And then 25 years later, after the program, that person decided to start a winery. And that's where that training and that exposure, the network came into play.
You think it's easier to start a Main Street company or a venture backable type company?
Venture back is tough because you enter in a different... it's not just the business, but it's also being astute about managing a board and surviving the board.
Yes. And so many times it takes forever to get your customers and your sales and all that kind of stuff going. To me, it seems so much easier if I'm the number two guy at the construction company to either buy out my boss and become a general contractor or start my own or just any other small, what I'll call Main Street type company, even a restaurant. At least right off the bat, you've got customers and revenue coming through versus these startups take, you know, a long time to build out the product and forever to get profitable. So you really don't get a paycheck.
Yeah. So generally speaking, venture money is when you have to ramp up very, very fast and you're capital intensive by definition. So you need money to build. Typically, this is around R&D, product R&D, commercial phase. It comes into play with subsequent series where you need to build a sales team. So you can't be profitable and be self-sustained. But as you said, the biggest focus should be having customer pay for it, finance your growth. The banks, of course, you know, Five Star Bank, for example, do a phenomenal job because they know they support us.
Cheers to that. I love Five Star.
And so they do phenomenal programs, and SBA and other banks, I know B of A does a lot, Wells Fargo does a lot locally as well. There's a lot of support. But the problem was, you know, debt financing is that you have to have some kind of a very short-term receivable value. So, so otherwise, you have to collateralize somewhere.
Right.
It's either your personal assets or something else. It's a commitment no matter what, you know. Yeah. So, but the venture, it's complicated because it's very expensive to finance with venture money. Equity financing is expensive. Why is it expensive? Because you have to give away a chunk of the company, and then you have to deal with investors like me who are not really always nice. You know,
you're not nice. The Growth Factory were always nice.
But you see what I mean? You know, you got to keep them accountable. You got LPs, got people behind you that need to see the return. So you know, you put a little bit of pressure there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so for SEA, what's the you talked about the cohort, you know, this thing starting up. So what do you have to do to get involved and sign up? How does that work?
Yeah, so we have a website that is sealink.org where they can go on, and it says right there, please enroll or
sealink.org. Okay, you can Google Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy.
That's
and it comes up. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
So there's a selection process with usually board members interviewing the candidates, and we look for the spark.
What if you don't see that? Do you they get declined?
Well, we have some decline, and then mostly they are they self-decline. They realize not for them.
Okay, right. If you're not serious about it, then maybe it's not a good fit.
At first, we ask for a fee. You know, it's $750 for students, $1,500 for non-students. So skin in the game, right there. You know, they got to pay for it, and so we are one of the few paid program in town. And you know, they got to commit to this boot camp. This is hard. This is the most involved program that I know of in the region because it's 15 Saturdays, every Saturday. And in the week, they have to exchange as a team to be ready for Saturday. So that's a commitment. It's transformative, but it's a big commitment.
And so they go through this training, and at the end, they come out with a business plan. They're ready to launch a business if that's what they desire to do.
That's the idea. The idea is that, first of all, many of them already have a business, so that's an acceleration to their business. They gain few team members they didn't expect to have. They may meet some investors who say, you know, I'm going to pitch it. I'm going to invest in it. Jim Corbett told me he made a lot of really good returns investing himself in all those companies that were started out of SEA. That was his best returns ever. And so if you invite him again, he'll tell you all about it.
I love it.
but he said that was the best investment opportunities. And some of our board members are looking at that investment opportunities as well, looking at the right entrepreneurs and shaping them with the mentors. And something I didn't mention, there's a big, strong mentorship program. Every team has an assigned mentor that follow them from week 4 to week 15. Of course, they cannot be assigned before the teams are formalized, but then they have a mentor with the checkpoints every week.
And these mentors, these are people who have been there, done that. They've built companies before.
Supposedly, they are entrepreneurs. They've done it. They may not be rock stars, but they are people who have the passion and see what needs to be done.
Yeah.
And so then at the end, there's a showcase that you mentioned. What happens at the showcase? That's a celebration of sorts?
It is a celebration, but it's also a popular vote as well. So there's different awards from the best business plan voted by the board, and people are investors as well participate to that vote. That's one thing. Then you've had the popular vote at the showcase. So
Is that by loudness of the applause, or how does that work?
Well, we should try that. No, but it's also an app. You know, you vote on it as an app. Okay, gotcha. What happens is they have posters around the room. It's at Elk Towers. For the last few years, it's a nice venue, very classy, old-fashioned building, one of the beautiful architecture of Sacramento, worth visiting just for that.
Yeah.
And then they have their posters all around the room, and then they pitch it as a team in front of the crowd. And then after that, there is a vote. And then before that, we have a keynote speaker. And we had phenomenal speakers over the years, you know.
I saw on your website that you had one of our portfolio companies, Foodum. Renetta was one of the people. I don't know if that was last year that she...
That was last year, presented. Yes, correct. Okay. Well, actually, last year, 2024.
Okay.
And so we had people like Mark Cuban, Dustin Baker, you know, people who were very famous that came to speak to our...
Oh, event. My goodness.
And the one coming now is going to be Kara Rombauer, who is phenomenal success story. He sold to Gallo for a very nice change of money. And then he's going to be interviewed by Raj Patel, who is an alumni, also in the wine business. And there's going to be a nice exchange talking about his entrepreneurship experience, the family entrepreneurship route experience. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's an interesting topic, family entrepreneurship.
Yes. I'm a member of the Family Business Association. There's actually two in town. I'm a member of both of them because my kids have... They aren't directly involved. Well, my daughter's a LP in the Growth Factory. My son actually helped me launch the show and the Growth Factory.
Nice.
And now runs our organization, Allegiant Vets. So
yeah.
We joined those organizations because we believe in the power of family and business.
This is, to me, it's the best if you can do that. This is phenomenal.
Yeah, love it. Okay, so you're the CEO. Is that, are you the CEO?
The president.
Okay, you're the president and you've been on the board for...
About 4 years.
About 4 years. And then as the president and board member, what's the longer term vision for SEA?
So we have to adapt to the ecosystem and the forces of change. We don't know yet. We haven't done a strat plan. We just coming out of the COVID era where there was a lot of remote Zoom-based instruction. I'm pushing hard for face-to-face because I think it's a lot of value. But of course, you got to adapt. So some of our other programs in the region told me it's hard to get people to come, even drive 20 miles, it's hard. So you got to have that flexibility. So we are soul searching on the flexibility aspect without losing our DNA, which, because, people come out of SEA, they feel they're part of a clan, a tribe. Actually, the word that came out from alumni is that I'm part of a tribe, because that's the force. They can always call each other, support each other way after the program. All the board members, past board members are accessible for free, of course. So, you have people who are big law firm players or bankers or whatever. They get preferential treatment because they are part of ACA. So there's a lot of non-tangible benefit that come with it, but you can't build that if it's only a Zoom-based call. platform. So I'm pretty big on face-to-face, but we got to adapt the program somehow as well.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Christian, I appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you for what you're doing to help so many entrepreneurs in our region. It's part of what feeds the growth factory. It's part of what feeds the overall Sacramento economy. If not for people like you, I mean, we would not be the same place. So thank you.
Happy to do it. And you know, entrepreneur is a French word, entreprendre, which means start.
Okay. Good to know.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for hosting me. Appreciate
it. Thanks. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.